Union leaders and federal workers rallied in downtown Cincinnati and Covington last week to advocate for their jobs. With a government shutdown now in its fourth week, it will become the second longest shutdown in U.S. history if it continues past today. You're tuned to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to talk about the shutdown and the impact it's having on federal workers are National Treasury Employees Union Chapter 279 President Michael Ottlinger, the union's Chapter 9 President Regina Parker, and reporter for the 19th, Amanda Becker. Thank you all so much for being here.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Regina, you represent IRS employees in Cincinnati. Do you have a sense for how many are furloughed, how many are working without pay?
Not as a whole. For my chapter, we have there was 471 bargaining unit employees roughly before the furlough. Right now, we have about, in my chapter, we have about 147 that are working during the furlough. The majority of them are kind of in the exempt status, so we are working right now with being paid normally, but that could change at any time.
Okay, so they are working and being paid because of this exempt status, but that's not a guarantee.
Correct.
Okay. So have any of these employees, I guess the furloughed people, have they missed a full paycheck at this point? Talk about the financial pressure employees are under.
IRS had a little bit of a leeway. We had a 5-day leeway from funding. So I think they have one more. I think this next pay will have a 5-day pay and for those who are furloughed. And then after that, they'll have no pay coming in until the end of the shutdown.
Wow. And so what does that mean for people? They've got to be nervous about that.
Oh, they're terrified. They're scared. We're looking at people who have kids. We're not rich people. We are just middle class people. So they are looking at, you know, using their savings. They have to support their kids, pay for the bills, medicine. We have health insurance costs. When you're furloughed, they're not, you know, taking out your stuff out of your pay because you have no pay for them to pay for that. You have to buy your medicines. Medicines doesn't care that government shut down, and you have to pay for that. We had a lot of time with the last furlough. People had problems paying for their meds.
Michael, what about EPA employees locally? Do you have a sense for how many are furloughed, how many are working without pay?
We know that at EPA, the Office of Research and Development, has been a particular target. I don't know why there's so much animus towards ORD, but that's, of course, where we see the biggest number of people who are furloughed, and it's over 650 nationwide, and we think that that's over 200 here in Cincinnati. One thing that characterizes this administration is their pettiness, and they're unwilling to provide the union with information that they're statutorily obliged to give us. So they make it very difficult for us to have an awareness of precisely what's going on.
So what financial pressure are EPA employees locally facing?
Well, it's the same thing as Reggie said, but I'd say especially younger families who don't make that much money, who still have college tuition debts and they have mortgages. And, you know, one-earner families are really in a desperate situation. It's terribly painful and stressful for them. It's part of the constant turmoil that we've experienced since the beginning of the administration. Just disruption after disruption. They make it impossible for people to do their jobs. And I say all the time that EPA employees absolutely love the agency. It's true for most federal agencies. They're very dedicated to the mission of the agency, and that's what they want to do. As Reggie said, we're from the middle class. The civil service is a protection for the American people. And right now, it's all that stands between, you know, the oligarchs who are in control of everything and are very self-interested, and they're not focused on what's good for the American people at all.
Amanda, explain the politics around this shutdown. Are these Affordable Health Care Act subsidies still at the heart of the impasse between congressional Republicans and Democrats?
Yes, they are. And I will say, you mentioned that after today we'll be tied for the second longest shutdown in history. And there really is no significant negotiating to speak of happening in Washington right now about this. Democrats are refusing to budge because of these ACA subsidy payments that they want to see extended to prevent people's health care costs from ballooning. And Republicans don't have the votes to pass a continuing resolution or a funding measure on their own. So that is kind of the state of play. That's the same it's been for 3 weeks now, going back to October 1st and even before that when they were trying to negotiate to avoid this. But there really have not been any overtures to the Democrats to bring them to the table, and they're not coming to the table absent that.
So, Amanda, Democrats and Republicans don't seem any closer to any kind of resolution to this shutdown?
Correct. And it's important for listeners to know that at the beginning of a government shutdown, there aren't as many disruptions that you see if you are not a furloughed federal worker or a federal worker who's essential, who has to continue working but not get paid. But the longer this continues, the more this will be felt outside of the federal workforce. In programs that people rely on every day, from nutrition programs to Head Start, to even being able to go to a Social Security office to kind of set up your benefits or ask questions or if you have a problem.
We're talking about the federal government shutdown now in its fourth week and its impact on local workers. Have you or a family member been furloughed? Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. I want to ask both of you this, but I'll start with you, Regina. What's your message to Congress? As you talk to the employees you represent, what would you like members of Congress to hear from you?
We're not lazy. We're working. So why aren't you? Your job is to make the laws. Your job is to pass this budget. We hear a lot about how federal employees are lazy and don't want to work. Now, the latest is that you have two or three jobs. That's the president's latest. Yeah, we have two or three jobs because we're not being paid enough to be able to pay for our bills, pay for the stuff that your tariffs have now raised prices on. So we're out and we're working. We want to work. I don't want to sit at home and do nothing. I want to work. I'm lucky I am working. But there's a lot of people who aren't, and they want to work. But Congress is not working to come together and talk about it. And I mean meaningful talk, not sit there and yell at each other and not do anything, but bipartisan, sit down, meaningfully discuss the situation and come up with an actual real situation, not give in to each other and just, pass things around. So that's what we need. We need people to actually make real good decisions.
Michael, what would your message for Congress be?
I remember the days of Dean Rust and Kousty when we had a budget and it got worked through Congress, and there was a lot of pushing and pulling, but there was compromise and cooperation, and there was an awareness that this is something that they absolutely needed to do. And so I'd like the White House to cooperate with them also and be realistic so we can do what's necessary here.
Michael, we've talked about what this shutdown means for federal workers. What impact does this have on the American people in terms of the work these agencies do for the public?
Well, the federal employees, as I said, are absolutely dedicated to protecting the American people from all kinds of exposures and adverse conditions. We make sure that their water's clean and their air is clean and that their soil is clean. And we inform them about the hazards, and we make recommendations that we make sincerely in the best interest of Americans. And some of the oligarchs may not like that. They don't like these rules because it interferes with their high-handed desire to do exactly what they want for their purposes, not in the interest of the average American citizen. That's what people need to understand.
What about you, Regina? Do you, what impact does this have on the American people who count on the work the IRS does?
Everybody wants to hate the IRS. But think about it. The IRS brings in 97% of the income that funds what the government does. So there's your money to do everything. It's not that we're going out there saying, give us your money because we want to take all the money. It's because Congress before us has set the laws to say, this is what you need to do to pay your fair share to fund our government. That's what we are doing. We have taken an oath to the Constitution, you know, to uphold the Constitution. That's what we're doing. We are going out there and following those rules and getting people's fair share. And that's all we're doing. And without us being able to do it, how are you going to do anything? How are you going to have your national parks? How are you going to fund the pavements of the road or clean up the roads and do anything if you don't bring in the money? That's what's going on with not having IRS being able to work.
And is that how is that? Can you give me more detail about what impact this is having on the IRS's ability to do what you need to do to collect that money that pays for all these government services?
Well, right now you've got about half of the probably less than half of the agents who are on the phones who are answering questions. So people calling in who want to pay what they owe. Maybe they couldn't at the time pay, but they've set up arrangements for it and they can't do it. Or we're getting ready to go into filing season. This is the time when we should be getting ready for it. And we have less than half the people ready to be able to do so, with threats that we're going to have less than that because they want to reduce our force. In fact, we have notices going out for reduction in force supposedly in December, December 9th. So how are we going to get ready for a filing season that's starting January 1st? We have not been able to figure that out. My division is tax-exempt and government entities. So we are the people who determine by applications those exempt organizations. We've got all these disasters happening, so we have a lot of applications. How can we determine if they're exempt if there's nobody there to go over those applications?
You mentioned reductions in force, but even before the shutdown, I'll start with you, Michael. Were the local offices for the EPA working with fewer people than they used to have?
Well, since the start of this administration, they've tried to eliminate as many people as possible. And I don't see a great deal of compassion. They've had all these reorganizations. They're trying to intimidate people. They're insulting good American citizens, many of them veterans, publicly calling them names, calling them lazy. This is just low behavior, and it's unacceptable. And it just shows that all they want to do is remove the civil service because they want to remove a firewall that actually looks out for the best interest of the American people.
Did the IRS have fewer people before the shutdown than you've had in the past, Regina?
No, we had more before. Well, I take that back. We've gone through a series of deferred resignation. We had two of them. One in March, and then one May. So into the deferred resignation program, we had people who were set to resign formally September 30th. So they were at home being paid not to work by fact that the administration, who called them lazy, sitting at home, not working, wanted them to sit at home and be paid and not work until September 30th when they would be officially let go from the service. We haven't figured that one out yet either.
Huh. Amanda, you talked about this a little bit before, but tell us more about these federal programs that are at risk because of this shutdown and the impact those could have on everybody.
Yeah, so one of them is Head Start. The way that Head Start is funded, it's kind of rolling throughout the year, and various programs are funded on the first of each month. So the way it happened to fall is that on October 1st, in October, only six Head Start programs went unfunded. Coming up on November 1st, for that month, it will be 135 Head Start programs will not be funded. And this is their funding for a year. So at the first of the month, programs throughout the country are funded for Head Start. So if they don't receive their funding, they're going to have to make that up somehow, in order to keep operating and to keep paying payroll and to keep them open for kids to come to. So that's one thing that I think people should be aware of, if we start to see problems after the first of the next month. Another one is the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, SNAP, colloquially called food stamps. 1.3 million Ohioans participated in SNAP last year. We have talked about this and SNAP cuts that came in other ways that will take effect next year. So SNAP isn't immediately affected when the government shuts down. But the longer that it continues and the more it goes through kind of its contingency reserves, it will start to be felt out in the states. And so the Department of Agriculture sent a notice on October 10th that they will not have enough to pay for the entirety of November SNAP benefits if the shutdown is continuing. And so you're already seeing states, neighboring Pennsylvania is one of them, and North Carolina, Wisconsin, Minnesota, all of these states are already warning that they don't know what to do and might be running out of money come November 1st for the SNAP program. So that's just a couple of examples. We're also already seeing reports of Social Security offices, like I mentioned earlier, having to scale back hours. So instead of opening at 9 a.m., they're having to open at 1 p.m. They're only taking phone calls instead of people being able to come to the office. So, you know, in the next couple of weeks, if this shutdown continues, I do think that people will start to see these impacts and feel them in their day-to-day lives in Ohio.
Amanda, you mentioned payroll and Head Start. What's the latest on whether furloughed employees will receive back pay when the shutdown has ended? I know Congress passed a law that President Trump signed during his first term, but there's been some talk that they might not get paid.
Yeah, and there's also been talk that they're going to use this as an excuse to fire them, called a big reduction in force. So they already did a reduction in force of about 4,000 federal employees, mainly at Treasury, Health and Human Services, Education, and HUD, the housing agency. Now that has been put on hold by a court for now, but you have the head of the Office of Management and Budget, Russell Vogt, who kind of is the head of kind of what I would describe as kind of the nerve center of federal government in terms of distributing money and making sure programs are functioning. He has said he would love to see that number of just above 4,000 rise to being north of 10,000 recently. So in addition to this question of whether furloughed workers will get paid, there's also an open question of whether they're going to try to get rid of their jobs in the meantime.
Michael, all of this talk, this shutdown, do you think that this will have an impact on whether people want to work for the federal government even after the shutdown ends?
Well, it certainly will. You know, you get a lot of youngsters who are highly qualified and they're looking at starting their careers, and they have to ask themselves, do I want to be insulted by the president? Do I want people to tell me that I'm not going to get paid? Am I going to be appreciated in my job? Will I have a career? No, this is terrible. This is a very destructive approach to running the government.
What do you think, Regina?
Yes. We already have people who are struggling, they only took the jobs basically because they had telework ability, and that has been taken away from us. So we hear a lot about that. You know, so right now we don't telework. So there's a lot of problems now with getting people before they stopped hiring, getting them to be able to work because of not having telework. So now you're going to add into this possibility of being fired every time. We had probationary employees that were there for less than a year. They were let go. Then they came back. Now a good portion of them are furloughed again. So it's the back and forth. It's making it very difficult for people to want to be a part of it. Then again, the money situation, not sure about their health care. Amanda talked about the SNAP. And we have a lot of people, like I said, middle class, a lot of people are on food stamps as well. They're lower income. Even though they're working, they're still that. So they use the subsidies of health, food stamps and all. So they need those assistance as well.
Michael, you talked about the mission and the purpose that EPA employees feel about this work. Are we reaching a point where people, even with that sense of purpose and that deep commitment to the mission, just can't put up with this uncertainty anymore?
Well, it's horrible, and those people with families certainly have to evaluate. But this is one of the very funny things, is that people in our agency love the agency so much and care so much about what they're doing that they're just bearing up under this. It's an amazing thing. If there's an indication of dedication, putting up with all of this abuse is certainly that.
Speaking of dedication, there's this group that has been standing up for science. What's the latest with those folks?
Well, the administration put all of the people who signed this public letter, petition, whatever you want to call it, on administrative leave for a very long time. And I don't know what kind of an investigation they did or what information they found out about employees or who found it out for them, whether it was Palantir or whoever else went out and searched social media or other things like that. This is very frightening. I refer to those employees as put in a gulag for a couple of months. This is profoundly un-American. They've suspended some of them. They've removed some of them. And the union is going to fight for their First Amendment rights, because it's been clearly decided in the courts that an American citizen working for the federal government has the right, and that it's in the public interest for them to speak on matters of serious concern to the public.
Regina, we only have about a very short time left, and in about 30 seconds, your members have been rallying. What can members of the public do to make their voices heard about this?
Talk to your members of Congress. Actually, they can go to ntu.org. We do have it for outside non-members to be able to go in that and use our pre-done letters to be able to send to their members of Congress. They can go in, put in their zip codes, and it'll tell them who their members are, and they can send our letters. Or they can always go to their own Googles and do that. But let them know. Let them know you want us back because you need our services.
Well, I've been talking with National Treasury Employees Union Chapter 279 President Michael Ottlinger and the union's Chapter 9 President Regina Parker, along with reporter for the 19th Amanda Becker. Thank you all so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Harper Carlton. Technical director today is Stephen Baum. And Rob Fetters composed our theme music. I'm Lucy May. Thank you so much for listening.